Your Honor, I had the privilege of reading your biography, and I'm fascinated by it. There's so many questions I have, not relating to the ICTR, that it would take all day to work through those. But if I may introduce myself first, I was Chief Justice of the Washington State Supreme Court, a state with about 7 million people and approximately 25,000 lawyers. In our state, we were in charge of the lawyers as well as the judges, and so we have a great deal to keep us busy. I also chaired a national organization called the American Judicature Society that dealt with merit selection and retention of judges and judicial education. I was fascinated to read this outline of your program for the next 4 or 5 days, because it is identical to what we do, not just in the United States, but it's been my privilege to conduct programs like this throughout the world. I educated Iraqi judges for 3 years in Prague, and we touched on almost exactly the principles that you speak of here. So I'd love to hear what your program will be. I was interested in the titles that are involved here. The Right Honorable, I must say, you've earned, but tell me, what is that?
You know, we are still part of the British Commonwealth.
Yes.
And all the Saints is an independent state. It's a monarchy.
Yes.
The Queen of England is still the head of state. And from time to time, she appoints members to her Privy Council. And I had the privilege and honor to have been appointed as a member of Her Majesty's Privy Council. So the phrase Right Honorable is a result of that appointment. Of course, because I am an overseas appointee, it's rather honorary. Although I have attended a meeting of the Privy Council on one occasion, but I think it's probably more honorary than functional.
But it is a nice recognition of your ability, your stature, and thank you for the explanation. There was one other thing I ran into in going through your biography, and that is your assignment to the Maurice Bishop criminal trial. It was just mentioned in two lines in the biography I read, but what was involved in that, sir?
Well, you recall that in 1983, the U.S. government was involved in the invasion of the state of Grenada.
Yes.
And that had to do with the end of the revolutionary government under Maurice Bishop's regime. It had come to an end when a faction of the government killed Maurice Bishop and a number of other persons. And there were a number of trials arising out of that, including the trial for the murder of Maurice Bishop and 10 other persons at one of the army headquarter sites in St. George's, Grenada. The persons who were accused were the members of the Central Committee of the governing party, and some of the soldiers who effected the killing. I was assigned by the Eastern Caribbean to act as Chief Justice in Grenada for the purpose of conducting the trial. And it lasted for approximately 1 year in 1986.
And was that at all similar to the work you do here at the ICTR?
Well, one can find a number of similarities, but it's different because I was sitting in a domestic jurisdiction.
Yes.
I was a single judge with a jury. Here we are conducting an international tribunal. I sit on a panel of 3 judges without a jury. And the rules of procedure are all the similar. Have significant differences. The security issues were much the same in both situations. There are similarities and differences.
I would be interested in the procedural differences and similarities.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you would imagine, the St. Kitts has a common law system, and which is very similar to that in the United States, in the management of criminal trials with a jury. And the criminal procedure rules here in the ICTR combine many elements of the common law procedures, but they also include some elements that are more common to the civil law practice and procedure. It's a bit of a hybrid system. So the first issue is that the process of issuing issuing the indictment includes the judge. When the prosecutor has enough information to indict, he has to apply to the judge to confirm the indictment, and he submits the supporting material which informs the preparation of the indictment to the judge. The judge has the opportunity to confirm it or to refuse to confirm it or to direct amendments or further investigations if he thinks it is necessary. So that's the first issue. Then the second issue is the process of initial appearance. When an arrest is effected, the judge or a judge of the tribunal has to see the accused person at the first convenient moment after his arrest and ensure basic guarantees of his rights have been provided to him. You know, we make inquiries of the provisions of a lawyer, the fact that he's received information in a language that he can understand, and various things of that nature, and we take the plea. Then there is a procedure which follows, which requires the prosecution to give detailed information to the accused of the cause of the charges against him. And this involves serving all of the statements that have to be used in the trial 60 days before the commencement of the trial. And during that process, the defense also has an opportunity to challenge the indictment or to apply for the court to assist in tightening the indictment up. And the tribunal has developed quite a significant body of jurisprudence on the indictment. We call this the vagueness of the indictment jurisprudence, yes. Requiring the prosecutor to be very precise, as precise as possible, in identifying the nature and cause of the charges against the accused. So we have a pretty active pre-trial jurisprudence and process before the trial actually commences. Once the trial starts, I have this discussion with many people as to the interplay between the common law and the civil law processes. And it's very interesting that I think that during that pretrial phase, the rules allow the chamber to exercise many of the powers that one would associate with an investigative judge. And it's been used to a greater or less extent from time to time and by different chambers over the duration of the tribunal. Once the trial starts, the actual hearing starts, the process is much more similar to the adversarial advocacy to which the common law jurisprudence are accustomed. The principle of orality dominates the proceedings. The majority of evidence is given orally by the witnesses, and the witnesses are led in chief by the side of the party which calls the witness, and then the rights of cross-examination.